Welcome to our latest podcast. I'm joined, of course, by Liz.
Hello.
Now, this podcast is a slightly different format in that Liz is going to be driving this, asking questions and so on. And the purpose and the point is that we've produced a white paper, and this is the first promotion or dialogue that we've had about the white paper. And we want to communicate the contents as best we can through a variety of different mediums. Obviously, we've written it. It's on our website. We're doing this podcast, and we have a video as well. And the video is of the podcast. But the point is that these are methods of being able to communicate this message.
Okay, thank you. So you've written this white paper, mm-hmm. and the title of it is that it's a white paper for investors and directors. Yep. And so if you could just tell our listeners, viewers, the reason behind producing the white paper in the first place, if we just start there.
Okay. My belief and my research and 30 years in business has channeled or has directed me to focus on a very narrow group of people, and they are the investors and directors. There's a very specific reason for this. Investors, entrepreneurial or otherwise, have a significant impact on startups and new businesses. Directors are either working in enterprise or larger organizations, and also they like to and do get investment or provide investment for startups, but also tend to provide investment for their own businesses if that's the case. So there are these two groups of people are significantly influential in what happens with startups. However, there's a big problem that most startups go bust. And to explain the problem, there is a small group of people that can influence a change, and they are the investors and directors, because everybody else are employed. So they don't have the same drivers to do something about it because they're employed. They're being paid right now to do what they're doing. And until they change, companies will still keep going bust. So the focus is not to be sycophantic towards investors and directors, not at all. It's identifying them as the only people that can affect a change in B2B organizations.
Okay, so where do you see the problem then? I mean, looking at the white paper, you start off with some statistics. Perhaps you'd just like to share those, what those statistics are about startups and small business.
Every year, 500,000 new businesses start up. Of those businesses, 20% go bust in the first year, 30% go bust in the second year, 50% go bust by the third year, 70% go bust by the 10th year. I mean, that's shocking in itself, but it's just how it is. Of businesses that start up who receive investment, 40% go bust.
Go bust.
Period.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So any investor that's put money into a startup, 40% of them go bust. So you've only got a 60% chance of making any money. However, 75% of every startup doesn't make their investor any money. So now we're down to 25%. Of the final remaining element, 95%, not of the remaining, but of that original figure, 95% of all businesses that receive investment never reach the targets that they forecast in the first place.
Wow.
So we're looking at this thinking, or anybody looking at this would go, well, I understand about a gamble. I understand about investment and so on and so on. But with those statistics, they're shocking. Mm. I mean, they're mad. You just wouldn't want to do it. Why would you want to invest in a startup? Because but it's almost like you can sense people say, well, it'll never happen to me because we're so clever. And my view on that is, well, if you are so clever as an inventor or an entrepreneur, if you're that intellectual, bearing in mind all these statistics, why can't you stop yourself from going bust? Surely to goodness, you're not like the hoi polloi. So something's going wrong here and it's not been identified. And because I cut my teeth in sales, I moved across to marketing, not because I wasn't any good at selling. I was extremely good at selling. I sold millions of pounds worth of gear of technology in my own business. Mm. But anybody that sold, if you can sell, you can sell. But how do you scale it? I mean, that's the juicy bit. Mm. How do you scale selling? And, you know, if you want to be really, really successful, you sell something really, really big, like, I don't know, jumbo jets. But that's not the point. The point is how do you scale selling? How do you just keep making it happen again and again and again? You go, oh, the internet. That's what you need. You need to get on the internet and become an e-commerce millionaire. Yeah, but selling B2B, that doesn't ring true.
Mm.
Because B2B requires kind of almost like intervention. It needs people to be aware of business problems in order to provide a solution. And you can't necessarily knock it out online. It doesn't happen. The adage of if you want to become a millionaire, sell something for a pound to a million people. Okay, a million. So when it comes to business and B2B, whether it's software as a service, whether it's SaaS, whether it's any particular hardware, you have to have people who get it, who understand the mechanics of business in order to recommend a product or a solution to alleviate your problem.
So did you do any research into the reasons why these businesses fail so spectacularly? And what statistics did you see? What statistics did you identify as being the primary causes for the failure?
I mean, that's the white paper is a bit of a giveaway because the white paper title is poor marketing and a reliance on technology. So it's marketing, poor marketing and reliance on technology causes business failure.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that are going to listen to this and go, you've got to be joking. You're out of your mind. You go, yep. And for people in England, you understand this. Everyone in you, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough. And the point is that I've got statistics coming out of my
ears.
The reason being, you have to understand selling to understand why marketing fails. And I'll come on to the issue between sales teams and sales departments and marketing departments in a minute. But people buy people, they always have. And if we go back to like the 50s and 60s, business technology didn't really exist at such a massive scale. You had typing pools and so on. And it wasn't until almost the mid 80s when electronic typewriters came with small memories, not the golf ball. Remember the golf ball stuff?
But I remember the other ones.
You know, with a memory, so you could type something and press return, and then it would type it up. But you had that whole LC. So business technology started coming to its own at quite a pace in the late 80s and in 90s. And so the way of generating business was done through cold calling. So the salespeople would go out, they would hunt down business, they would find people that were looking to buy, and they would telephone cold call to make an appointment. They would handle objections on the phone and so on. They would go and meet and chat and talk and look to get the prospect to go and look at a product or demonstration. And then If they were happy with the demonstration, then they'd go back and look to get it signed up and close the deal and so on, and would go back to their office, ring the bell. What a superstar. So businesses couldn't really survive without the salesperson going out and doing that, fulfilling that role. Now look at the internet. The internet's here, so therefore there's an opportunity or a methodology to present lots of information about the product. And so if we look at the statistics now and the numbers, 70 to 80% of the research process of looking at a product is completed by the prospect before a salesperson is even invited in to talk to them. So you think, okay, well, if they're doing all this work online, what's happening with the salesperson?
Yeah.
Well, it's still cold calling. Mm. They're still trying to make it happen in terms of cold calling, which is a 200 to 1 shot. And I'll explain that now, meaning that if you want to try and find somebody that's interested in your product, you'd probably have to phone about 80 people a day, give or take. And it's roughly one out of every 200 calls, you'll find someone that's actually interested in your product. Mm. So it's 3 days work to find one person interested. That's really a bad ratio in terms of work effort. So then you could say, well, what have we got marketing for? You go, okay, well, how are marketing doing in that respect? Well, because there's been this transition from the way that salespeople worked, they then didn't submit to marketing, but marketing, you know, people wanted people, individuals, to know about marketing because of digital, because of the internet. So salespeople weren't expected to know about the internet. These marketing people were supposed to know all about that. So there was the early stage, the internet, then there was 2000, the boom bust, and then circa mid-2000s, we've got the email processes, and then gradually the marketing automation platforms came into play. And so people were saying, right, well, this is what you need. This is the latest, greatest thing. Buy an automation platform, Eloqua, Marketo, Pardot, Acton, and so on. These manufacturers produced this software, which meant that if someone was interested in what you had on offer, they would find you online, choose to download some information, and because they're making a choice to download some information, they'll give you their email address, and then they'll download it. So it all sounds good. It all sounds plausible. But when you go back to the sales process, people buy people. So the salespeople were seeing the whites of their eyes in the first place. Now it's just a piece of paper commodity which says, is it any good? Does it work? So 70%, 80% of people are looking to establish if the product's any good, i.e. doing their research. Mm-hmm. They don't need to speak to a salesman.
So do you think there's still, for some businesses, do you think there's still a focus when they bring salespeople into a business? So say you've got a new startup, or if you are that entrepreneur and whatever, do you think there's an emphasis on using the black book of the salesman, and do you think that's still got longevity within a business, using a salesman's black book that he brings with him? Do you think that kind of now supersedes?
It's a poison chalice in a way, because the difficulty with the black book is that the relationship was with the salesperson. Salesperson joins company. Salesperson owns his own black book.
Mm-hmm.
If he sells something that the company, the product of the company, all well and good. But when the salesman leaves, he takes the black book with him.
Yeah.
Along with the other prospects that were in that company at that point in time as well. And there is an underhand expectation by certain companies that when you come and join us, you will bring your black book and you'll go and jump all over your old company's prospects, which is not the way to do business. It is if it's underhand. Therefore, you pay your money, meaning you pay a salary.
Mm-hmm.
You make your choice. But the trouble with that is that there's an assumption that they've got enough. There's enough validity within the black book in the first place.
Mm.
But the problem, the kind of the the crux of that problem is that what do we all want? We all want success. We want to grow our businesses. We want success. But you cannot grow that black book because that black book is based upon his relationships with his old customers and older prospects.
So you're saying it's not sustainable then?
No. It can never be.
What about telesales? Is telesales, would you say that telesales is a way to grow a business, or do you think even that's got a point where it stops being viable?
The thing is, does anybody think it's viable right now? This is the question. Who likes to receive cold calls? Nobody. How successful are cold calls? 200 to 1. What about right now? Well, I'd hate to think what a telesalesperson is doing right now, because everyone's sitting at home. Everyone's on their mobile at home or their company mobile at home. So you can't contact anyone now, or virtually anyone. But if 70%, 80% of the research is done by the prospect before inviting anybody in, what's the telesalesperson doing? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of shifted to a point where it's becoming a BDR and they're sitting on looking at LinkedIn, looking at Sales Navigator on LinkedIn. Yeah. So it's
just a different way of doing telesales.
Yeah, it's just telesales all the same. Mm-hmm. So, but it's this group of people that are looking, and what are they looking at? And this is where it starts to get really, I think, very interesting, and that's what's prompted this. What are they looking at? If they're researching, who are they looking at? What are they looking at? Because if someone says, right, well, what we're going to do in order to bring this together, we're going to use a marketing automation platform. We're going to create our content, but we're going to make it available in exchange for an email address and a name.
So it's a transaction.
Yeah. So what you're doing is saying, okay, we're going to force you as a prospect into a transaction up front. You will give us your email address and your name. Mm-hmm. You can then download this information, and then we're going to cold call you anyway.
Yeah.
So they're not saying we're not going to cold call. Of course. And even whether it includes a telephone number or not, everybody
knows. They'll hunt you down.
They'll hunt you down, absolutely.
So I've done it myself, yeah.
So we've got this situation that you've now got a company that is gatekeeping their product, their content.
Yeah.
The gatekeeper before was the receptionist or exec assistant that wouldn't allow you to speak to the prospect or decision maker. Mm-hmm. Now, marketing is gatekeeping the content, saying that if you don't give me your email address.
It's a bit like the roles have reversed, haven't they?
If you look at who's doing it, marketing is doing it. Marketing are the people that are gatekeeping the content and not allowing the prospect to look at it unless they get their name and email address, which means cha-ching, they're now ringing the bell saying, look at me, we've achieved a KPI. Someone's looked at it, they've given us the information and downloaded it. That's passed over to sales. Knock yourself out, boys. You can now keep ringing them up and chasing them down. Mr. Customer now thinks that he's being stalked because all he wanted to do was have a read.
So do you think in terms of the role now of marketing, of any kind of marketing technology, do you think that that role is redundant, or where do you see the fault line with this? Because I know that there are some statistics in terms of CMOs and that kind of thing. I mean, what have you seen of the senior people in businesses? Are they achieving their own the goals?
No, I mean this is what surprise is not the right word. It's shock. Business owners are the entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that will take it on the chin. They can say anything they want, do anything they want because they're driving this. Mm. But these marketing people come along and go, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this. So there's a guy called Seth Godin. Many would have heard of him. Kind of, he's an extremely well-known global marketer. And, he's an author of 18 books and so on and so on. And he said that what happens is that marketers promise miracles. Nobody else in the business promises miracles except marketers. Salespeople, when they're taken on, have got a previous history. Marketers promise miracles. They can say anything about ROI or ROMI's return on marketing investment, anything they like. So they're allowed to come into the business and they promise miracles. This is a fact. The average tenure of a CMO is 18 months. You think, well, no, that must be wrong. And it's in the press, and recruitment companies who specialise in marketing, no surprise there, everybody knows it's 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
From Fortune 500 across the board, 18 months. Because they promise the earth, they don't deliver, they get fired. Promise the earth, get delivered, don't deliver, get fired. Because they can't deliver. It's impossible. Because they're saying that what we're going to do, we're going to use all this technology, we're going to set it up, and then this is the almost like the stupidity of it. So the marketers are going to hide all of your content simply because they've been given a KPI to achieve, which is to create marketing qualified leads for salespeople. In order to do that, they're going to hide all your great content behind a gate, behind an email form, and then you're going to pay Google to drive traffic to your landing page. So you've got to pay Google per click.
Mm-hmm.
So your break points almost. It could break on the fact that your written text on your pay-per-click advert is rubbish. That's number one. Number two, you might not bid enough for pay-per-click. That's number two. Number three, the landing page they go to might be really badly written with no logos on it, no social proof. Well, it could be multiple things. Not interested. Or they give you their details and the actual content's rubbish. It's not worth the paper it's written on.
Mm-hmm.
Two pages. I mean, I've seen recently, I saw a very, very big, not Sage, but a very, very big accounting platform, software, two-page white paper. So if it's not the pay-per-click or the text or the landing page or the actual content itself, or you phone them up afterwards and upset them. You've got five opportunities to mess up here. Five points of failure. And you're, as the company, as the investor or director, you can look at the numbers and go, wait a second, we're paying this quarterly amount of money to, whether it's Marketo or Eloqua or whoever, doesn't matter who it is, we're paying a lump to them. We're paying an even bigger lump to pay-per-click to Google, plus the whole group of people in marketing, in order to provide a lead by way of a filled-out form for someone in sales.
So do you think, I mean, going back to what Seth Godin says about the marketing people promising miracles, I mean, I've looked at my fair few of CMO job descriptions. I mean, what's your view of that? You know, are they realistic? Are they just...
I mean, it's one of those things in that I read them and go, yeah, I can do all that. No issue at all.
Mm.
No question at all. Don't care how long it is. Because, I mean, we're a consultancy firm. To provide consultancy, you've got to know what the score is. You've got to know it inside out, back to front. You've got to not argue with people, but you have to demonstrate your ability that you actually understand what's going on.
Yeah.
The one of the recent ones I saw, it was probably about in about 10 point, written in 10 point, two and a half A4 pages long. We want you to do this, 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 this. It went on and on and on and on and on. And at the bottom, it said, and you'll report to the CMO. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. So you'll bring in a marketing director who's answerable to the CMO, saying, oh, this CMO switched on because he'll fire their proverbial for not performing. That's not my fault, it's them. So the bottom line is, no, CMOs are failing the directors and the businesses that they work for because they're trying to use technology to deliver the KPIs, to deliver what is expected of them, Therefore, they can blame it on the technology, blame it on a multitude of people, blame it on 5 points of failure. They can do whatever they like.
So it's the combination of the two then, the MarTech being, the way the MarTech's being used, or the fact that it's being used at all,
yeah,
and the promises that the CMO makes that are very almost impossible to deliver because the MarTech gets in the way.
Yeah. It is an impossibility. If you were to turn around and say, right, okay, we've got this CMO who's being paid an absolute fortune. Yeah, 150, 200 grand a year, more, whatever, who cares? Mm-hmm. Scare the living daylights out of them. Say, right, I want you to write an article. I want you to write a long form article about this product that we sell.
Mm.
And I want to see it on the front page, on the first page of Google. Now.
Can that be done?
Every time. Well, I do it. And the thing is that there's a formula, there's a structure. There's a structure for a reason. There's it's not even a methodology. There's a format that Google demand.
Okay.
And they're not demanding it because, oh, we want you to pay us loads of money. There's no cost involved in this. But there's a format.
Mm-hmm.
The format's there for a reason. Google makes its money because it keeps drawing people back to it. So in order to ensure that they maintain their edge, is they have to deliver up results really quickly and good results. So, yes, Google can understand what's been written. Google can understand the layout of a document. If you create the perfect document, say it's got a video in it and maybe a link to a podcast, and it's got all this text and information and bullets and bullet lists and number lists and graphs and statistics and everything else, a bit like ours. And so Google can look at our document and say, I know the title of it because there's one title and one heading on it. There are multiple H2 headings, multiple H3 headings, and bullets, and numbers, and video. And the video has got structured data that encloses the transcript of the video. So when this is presented to voice search, Google, Siri, and Alexa say, what this person has said within their video, so it will serve it up. A combination of writing it properly, writing for a 12-year-old so a 12-year-old can understand it, so it doesn't have to be overly technical, and structuring it a certain way, and making sure that it's been indexed, making sure that it's on a sitemap, getting it indexed on Search Console with Google, you're done.
So how do you make sure that it's indexed, though? Because obviously there's a lot of companies out there that want to gatekeep their content. Are you able to index something that's gated?
This is the madness of it. Like I said earlier, that you've got people saying, right, what we're going to use this technology, gatekeep our content, and tell businesses if they want it, they have to give us their email address. So. The company has to pay per click, has to pay to advertise its content. So there's a point of failure. Your advertising and your written copy and your headlines have to be that good that they will encourage someone to come and download something. It's a lot of effort. I mean, bear with me. So there's a lot of effort doing that. As opposed to, Google's sitting there twiddling its thumbs going, well, listen, guys, you could use us if you want. All you have to do is write a good article. Make sure that you come across as being a thought leader. Make sure it makes sense and it's structured properly. And here's the parameters. And we'll put it on page one of Google for you for free.
So what you're saying then, not all content is created equally then?
No. I mean, you've got certain businesses that believe or perceive, well, we've got loads of content. 3-4 paragraphs. We've got people, we've both heard people say, listen, I want you to distill everything that we do as a company into 4 paragraphs. Chuck it out there, knock it out. It's like, you're mad. Because the point is, unless businesses, coming back to investors and directors, this will click. This will click with loads of people. They go, oh, crikey. Right, I understand. You produce a great piece of content, you know, like a white paper, like this, for example. Say this was about someone's product. You've got a 30-page document, 3,000 to 5,000 or 6,000 words. It's in depth, it's explanatory, and so on and so on. So you create this document. Because of Google Analytics and because of Tag Manager, one Tag Manager will tell you that someone's downloaded something. But Google Analytics will tell you, not only did someone go to that page and download it, if you convert this into an article, it's not a white paper, but it's an article on your website, You'll know how long someone spent on that one specific page. You can see what they clicked on, if they did click on anything, if there's anything clickable on that page. You can see how long they were engaged for. You can see how many people have read it, looked at it, but clicked away from it really quickly, which is your bounce rate. So there's all this information. Is exactly what you do with a salesperson.
Yeah.
You know, a salesman joins your company, promises the earth. You go, well, that's fine. Knock yourself out. Crack on, guys. And they fail within 3 months. So you fire them. Standard practice. Do the same with your content. If your content's not performing, there's a reason. Fire it. Delete it. Or if it is working but not working very well, edit it, look at it, review it, improve it. Edit it on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people go, oh, no, we can't do that because people are looking at our website. Really? Who cares? Change it on the fly. Change it constantly. Go, right, we'll change that heading. Have you got the right format? Have you got the right formula in that document? Present it. Keep adjusting it. Yes, it's happening. And that's what's required.
So do you think content, therefore, is the key to sustainable business?
It is, and it has to be. If businesses could have their time over and they would take a recommendation from me, it would be, don't start your startup until you've proven you can attract.
Yeah, in the white paper that you do, you talk about the Google experiment. Perhaps you'd like to share with us what the Google experiment is.
Well, I mentioned earlier about pay-per-click. Pay-per-click is very clever because you can, if nobody clicks on it, it doesn't cost you a penny. So the analogy, the scenario, the example is, the experiment is, a couple of guys start a business. They love what they're planning to do, and they write about it. They love it. They keep writing about it. And before they go to the bank or anything to do with finances, they've got their own website. They choose to spend some money on pay per click. So they go, right, this is what we think we're going to do, and nothing much happens. I think, well, that's not very good. You know, we've got a product that not many people know about, but we need to work on this. So they hone it down, they identify some keywords and a specific focus on a group of businesses, some certain types of businesses, and they relaunch their pay-per-click campaign again, and it works. Oh, this is good. They then change some of their content on their website to be persona and key person, key type business focused. So they've got business coming in from pay-per-click. They've got people spending time on their website. And they've got call to actions on their content that means that people are starting to make inquiries to say, come and talk to us. We can see this is going to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
They start selling. It starts happening. And then they go to an angel or venture capital company and say, we want to scale this. We can prove to you that we are attractive to these businesses here,
mm-hmm.
just through our pay-per-click and our marketing. We're not, you know, doing anything like trying to create viral videos or anything. We've established that we're attractive to these businesses.
Mm-hmm.
and they keep buying from us.
Are there any examples that you can give where content has been used in such a way that it's not only increased the exposure of a business, but has actually had a significant impact on their revenue and their turnover?
Well, if you look at the per person bit, just to begin with, the average business in the UK has about 80-90 grand, turns over 80-90 grand per person per annum. Some more, some less. But you don't want it to be much less. Hence, businesses keep going out of business. If you look at Google, Google's turnover per person per annum in 2018 was 1.2 million per person per annum. A lot of money. There's, you know, we're involved. We spend a lot of our time, you know, working with cameras and video and audio and everything else. And there's a company called Peak Design. And they kicked their approach off through lots of engagement and so on and so on. And there's only 38 of them. And theirs was 1.462 million per person per annum dollars, million dollars per person per annum. So from an investor's point of view, it's like, wow.
And did they do that predominantly through content?
Yeah.
I mean, what sort of content were they doing?
They would do video. They would do podcasts, lots of video, lots of YouTube stuff. They engaged with people that would use their, you know, through influencer marketing. So the bottom line, yeah, it was a good product, but there's loads of camera bags. There's Lowe and there's Billingham and there's loads of different bags out there. But it was like, we're going to do this. And they had a cause, which they talked about, but they were engaging. They were accessible. And it just meant that they achieved what they set out to achieve, but without spending stupid money, I call it stupid money, on that whole marketing infrastructure of gatekeeping content. Yes, it was B2C. Yeah, okay. But at the end of the day, if B2B in the UK is so poor, is so fractious or just on a knife edge all the time, why is that? And it's because the ratios are out of sync. You've got too much onus on salespeople, but we've got to have marketing. As David Ogilvy said, it wasn't David Ogilvy. There was a... I'll come back to me in a minute, saying whatever we spend on marketing, only half of it works. Only half the budget that we spend on marketing works. But I don't know which half. And it's unsurprising. And my view is that why should investors and directors know this? If you want to get an accountant, pay for an accountant. You want an HR person, pay for an HR person. You want salespeople, get more salespeople in. There's no problem with any of it. You can't buy sales. You can't buy another sale. So how does it work? Well, you've got to attract people to be able to sell to them. So businesses look at getting marketers in. And they think these marketers are supposed to be these technical whiz kids that can achieve this amazing integration with all these platforms. Yeah. So when I see these CVs, these ridiculous CVs, serves you right that you're going in and go, oh yeah, I can make all this work. I can make it all work together. Oh yeah, I'm your man. Give us the job. Oh, he's such a great guy. But he can't write. He wouldn't know a good bit of copy if it hit him in the face, because all he's going to do is gatekeep it, chuck it behind an email form, and you'll never get the exposure that you ever expected.
You talk here about becoming a content first business. So what do you mean by that? And then also, just following on from content, are there different types of content that businesses should be looking at? So content first, and then type of...
Okay. Content first, there's a methodology, there's a structure to this. Virtually everybody's heard of a funnel. And we have primary content, secondary content, general content, and product content. Turn it upside down. So you start with your general content. that's anything you want. Anything you want, you want to write about. It's irrelevant. It's only relevant to a very small number of people. Mm-hmm. You don't care. It could be a new hire. You could be moving. Could be a set of new cars. It could be anything. It could be Christmas jumpers. It's irrelevant per se. But you could put that content in, on your website. Secondary content is news, genuine news that people may well be interested in. The news can be picked up by Google and by Apple and by other people. So use it. But the information and the calls to action, because you're going to have your email on there, or you're going to have your web address, there are call to actions from that secondary content that will take people to your primary content. Mm-hmm. Your primary content is 3,000 to 6,000 words with bullets and lists and so on, mm-hmm. which is written that genuinely explains how to use this product of yours or these solutions of yours in different scenarios. You know, they basically look to teach people as much as you possibly can about the implementation of these products. And then you've got your product content. Your product is teaching them how the product actually works with video and information and downloads and instruction books and guides and goodness knows what. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at someone looking at your primary content, they like the primary content, the call to action, let's look at the product content. They love the product content. What's the call to action in the product content? Contact the customer. Contact the company. Mm-hmm. You've ticked their boxes. They've gone, wow, this company has given us everything. They're not chasing us down. You can because you're not chasing them down and you're not after an email address, it means your content becomes available to a wider audience. Every piece of content that you've got is every page. You're going to have a call to action. It's going to have your telephone number, and you can contact us this way. You can email us. You can go on to chat. You can go on to the, you know, even if you're producing content in different formats, which is the next part of it, which is Google recognize the written word. They also recognize video when it's got a transcript. We also do podcasts. People like podcasts. People listen to podcasts because they can listen to them on their commute or whatever or wherever. You know, you look at Sonos. Sonos now connects with YouTube and Spotify and Apple and so on. So therefore, you can listen through any type of medium that people have got. You can listen to podcasts. You've also got live, so you can go live. I mean, everyone's seen people going live on their iPhones. But we're talking B2B here. We're talking about people looking to potentially invest a significant amount of money in your software or products. Mm. So you have every responsibility to demonstrate to that company that you've got the aptitude to support and communicate to them on the level, in a high quality, you know, a high level of quality, mm. and not just holding up your phone in front of you. Oh, listen, you know, we can do this, and thinking that you can knock it out. Mm. You know, we're not talking about, you know, creating a TikTok video or whatever. We're talking about demonstrating your professionalism. And that's where the shift has to happen. Do I think that the time of the salesperson has been and gone? Yeah, I do. Because it's a group effort. The information and what's required by people that want to buy your product, our products, they will evaluate us from a distance. And if we're not forthcoming, they'll go somewhere else.
So do you think now the situation that we're currently in, sort of a semi-lockdown situation, a lot of people working from home, what opportunities do people have now to start creating content? Do you think now is a good time to start creating content, whatever that might be?
I think it kind of boils down to the entrepreneurial spirit in people. I would think about this. If the investors and directors have not been given this information, they're not going to make any decisions. They're not going to do anything.
No.
When you start looking at the entrepreneurial factors, you say, well, actually, if I had my time over, you've got all these people sitting at home. We all know they're not busy 24, they're not busy 8 hours a day, but especially the marketing people, get them writing. And the salespeople are probably the best people to write because they understand the real world problems that exist, and so they can write about it. It could be cleaned up and sorted and so on. So in this point where we are now, like you said, in semi-lockdown, the more content that's produced, the more opportunities your prospective customers have of finding you, because they're in lockdown too.
Yeah.
So if they need to find out about information, if whatever they need to do, more people are online now than ever before. I mean, I remember at the beginning of all this, people were worried about what was going to happen online. Nothing happened.
Mm. The burden on the internet.
Nothing happened. No surprise there. So everybody can operate from home. Mm. So, you know, one of the thoughts I had was that, you know, there are these offices that are not being used at capacity. You know, go and use, start a studio, set up a studio at the office, move some desks around, use a certain space in the office, and use that for filming, use that for podcasts. You know, make sure the sound is, you know, make sure the sound is, there's a whole variety of factors involved in, mm-hmm. in using this technology. But in the same way, I mean, there was a story I heard that there was a woman who produced, I think it was 20 recipes. That was it. She's not done any more since. And these recipes have had millions and millions and millions of views. So it's not about producing stuff at a rate of knots, but it is about producing information that's relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's relevant, people will keep looking at it. They'll keep, you know, they'll keep engaging with it. And that's what people need to do. This is not rocket science anymore. And I think that the problem has been people always want the easy option. They always want a way out. There's nothing wrong with that. But what's happened is that for this given period of time, since kind of 2008-09-ish, that's when the marketing automation became available, and the statistics are awful. All this technology has not moved that needle one iota. In fact, it's made it worse.
Do you think the dependence on MarTech has kind of, in some ways, stopped that creativity of the marketing departments?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, because there are people that advocate content, and we know, you know, some people get it. So that gives some kind of consolation almost to the people that write, that understand how important content is. But because it's not become mainstream, especially with B2B, because the directors have looked at this and said, marketing, waste of time after time. You know, we never get much business from it, because it's just rubbish. We've got to have these salespeople. You know, we've got to get them on the phone. You know, I didn't get where I am today without not getting on the phone, so these guys can do as they're told. You shift it and you look at if an emphasis is put on content and good content, and it's driven correctly, yeah, there might be some retraining needed for CMOs, because they've, not to put too fine a point in it, they've done a crap job for a lot of years, and they keep getting fired.
But they also keep cycling through these businesses, don't they? I think that's what...
Yeah, they take their...
That was the shocking bit that I got. We watched the interview with Seth Godin and Brian Rose from London Real, and he was talking about marketing, obviously, because that's his area of expertise. But the fact that he was, you know, he was saying that, you know, marketers or CMOs... And I think he was talking specifically about the Fortune 500 companies. But if you think about them, but think about how that trickles down, what happens in these big corporates does trickle down.
Yeah.
And I think that really shocked me, because obviously those CMOs are going somewhere else. And when you look at those job descriptions and you see what is expected, you know, it's... Where does the fault lie? I think it's a bit of both. I think you have to say.
You look at the. So you've got this 18-month tenure. It's in all the press. I've kind of joked with recruitment consultants and said, "Oh well, you know, there's a churn of 18 months anyway, isn't there?" Oh yeah, yeah.
But that's the average.
Ha ha ha.
But that's the average, and I think when you look at averages, 18 months is no time at all.
But it makes sense. So they come in. They promise the earth. They say this is what the plan's going to be. The business, no matter how big it is, says, okay, we'll let you do what you want to do. Then they give them a year to go and sort it out. And then, so 3 months to get it set up, a year to try and execute it, and 3 months to fire them, 18 months.
Yeah.
Makes sense. But the problem is that there are multiple reasons behind that as well, not just the ones that we talked about. But with B2C, selling to consumers, the marketers go for safe.
Yeah.
They go for the safe option every time. The people that that are involved and engaged in B2B marketing, they're going for the safe option. It's called technology.
Yeah.
Because you look at the list as long as your arm, whether you've got Marketo, integration with Salesforce, integration with Ranking, or not Ranking, Discover.org, integration with Lead Forensics, integration with anything, you know, with Adobe, if you're going to use Adobe. The integration elements are staggering.
Mm.
And you think, what for? I mean, it does make me smile, the thought, yeah, you could kick out all the marketing automation platforms. So what? Just use a basic email, ISP. ESP, email service provider. Just use something basic. But make your content available to everyone and don't stress about it. Just allow them to read it, but monitor it, improve it, make it better. If you're not sure, ask them. It's called market research. It's what the marketing team are supposed to be doing. I mean, there was a report article by CB Insights. It said the top 20 reasons startups fail. The top 10 out of 20 were marketing-related problems.
Yeah, over 50%, yeah.
The statistics that we got that said that 40% go bust anyway of businesses invested in 75 and 95, those statistics came from Harvard Business Review. The stats are everywhere. The general startup information comes from the UK government. Standard statistics. And nobody's sitting back going, wait a second, why is this happening?
Yeah.
One would be mad to go into business. It's stacked against you. Why? Because you think to arrive, you have to engage a CMO. To arrive, you have to offload and allow this person in a flowered shirt to go and do the work for you.
I think it's the conventional wisdom, isn't it, that you need somebody to drive that, but in actual fact what you need is somebody that knows about the business to write about the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in terms of where to next, what do you see as being the answer? Is it a quick fix? Is it something that is going to take a while? What do you see as being the solution then?
I would like to think initially that the response comes from them. The response comes from the investors and directors to think, wait a second, this guy's not pulling any punches. He's absolutely going for marketers here, yet he's a marketing consultant. All I do is join the dots. And we've produced a playbook. Now, the playbook for any, in the event of no other description exists, it's a 35-page document that says, do this. It's not complicated. Just do this. Here's the outline. Do it. Start it. And as you increase, as that content increases and gets better and people get better at creating it, so you'll get more business in and more inquiries. It's not complicated. We're not talking money here. Just do what you're supposed to do. Mm. So as that shift change happens within the business and you create more content, you get more people engaged in doing it, it increases your engagement and you'll attract more people. Happy days. At the same time, though, because you're increasing your content and getting more engagement, the numbers of salespeople and the way in which you were doing business before will decrease.
Mm.
So one increases, the other decreases. So I look at it as a longer term structure, in that the business becomes a purveyor of fine content.
Mm.
the numbers and types of people and the individuals involved, just for example, the really gregarious, happy-go-lucky salesperson who doesn't seem to do his target very often, but he's got a great personality. Make him a presenter. Make him a researcher. Make him an interviewer.
Mm.
Start producing. Start thinking of yourself not just someone as a company that writes, but a company that produces video. Start up a channel. Start up a live channel. Go out every Friday, as in produce a show every Friday.
Mm.
The tech costs next to nothing. It costs nothing to go live on YouTube. But you can buy some tech that makes it look good. So the one-off, you know, get rid of one salesperson's salary, and you could buy the best kit, virtually the best kit in the world, one person's salary. Yet your exposure exponentially increases. Getting good copywriters. But we've created this, an illustration. This is what it's got to look like.
Mm.
These are the things that you have to do. And that's what we do. I mean, people call us in. We advise people, this is what you need to do. It's just about fast-tracking it. If we were saying we've got this white paper and it's because we've produced this wonderful piece of technology, now come and buy it from us, doesn't exist. We're just saying, do it. Of 500,000 new businesses, let's stop some of them from going bust.
Yeah.
You don't want to go bust. Trust me. It's a painful, long process that damages everybody, everybody connected to the business, your family. It's living with butterflies day and night, waking up with them. You don't want it.
No.
And, you know, unless you've been there, you don't want to go there. But to stop going there, people think that it's, you know, people think about raising money. It's the, oh, look at us, look how clever we are. No, no. An investor's going to come along and expect the lion's share. So don't be going all getting all indignant about why should you have so much and I only want to give you a tiny percentage. That's why the guys on Dragon's Den laugh at them. I'm not giving you, I value my company even more than that. Yeah, look at the statistics. The likelihood that the Dragon's Den people are going to lose their shirt on you is very, very high.
Yeah.
So they can dictate how much the percentage they're going to take of your company. So the point is, if you can prove it, if you're an investor, start telling these people, listen, we'll look at what we've got on our plate at the moment or lined up at the moment. But these new people, just get them to prove they can attract business that isn't coming from a black book or your mates or your mum's friends, or anything like that, yeah?
Mm.
Prove that you can attract business and you got a deal. But if you can't prove it, there's no point.
Mm.
Not just for the investor, but for them. You know, I'm sure it's a lovely idea, but it ain't going to make any money. So don't put yourself through it.
Mm.
And so, you know, the youngsters wanting to be entrepreneurs, at the end of the day, we everybody knows that they big themselves up because they raised the money.
Mm.
Yeah, look at Theranos.
Yeah, so it's not a means to an end necessarily.
No, it's a bit like Tom Cruise going to show me the money.
Mm.
That's what the investment was for, was for you to go and make some money. But 40% go bust, 70% never make any, 75% never make any. So the odds are against everybody.
Mm.
But it's not being convinced. I don't need to be convinced about this. The reason people don't make the money is because they don't market themselves.
Mm.
They forget, they miss the absolute basics, which is communicate what you do.
Yeah.
Make yourself attractive. You'll succeed. That's it.
So that's basically that, summing up the white paper then. So what you're saying is that put aside those notions that marketing automation is going to solve all your problems.
Yeah.
Start writing content, start it now, but not just writing it, producing content. So whether that's videos or podcasts.
Yeah. Enjoy it.
but follow the guidelines that Google has laid out, because that will get you on the first page and it will get you noticed.
Yeah.
Ungate your content, because there's no point keeping it gated, because people can't find you. Google can't index it if it can't see it.
Correct.
And basically get off that treadmill of, the telesales treadmill.
Yeah.
Because once you stop running on that treadmill, you end up... I had just had a vision in my head there of Peter Kay with Ronnie Corbin.
Amarillo, yeah. all three of them on phones.
And he stops and he ends up, he falls off. We want to stop these businesses from going bust.
I mean, the thing is, we have to be pragmatic about this. Telling everybody to stop right away, not a good idea. You're getting an amount of business in through that way, fine, carry on. But be aware of this.
Yeah. So what can Sales Exchange do then to help businesses achieve these goals?
Oh, that's the best question ever. it's quite straightforward. We provide consultancy. We provide workshops. And based on that, consultancy and workshops, based on that, we will steer businesses. We steer businesses to fast track them to get this right. And it's not complicated. It doesn't take long. It's not complicated. And in terms of our offerings for businesses that don't know, people that don't know, there's the consultancy, there's the workshops. We also do business evaluation. And so we'll look at everything that you have, everything that you're looking at doing, and evaluate your marketing strategy as you move forward as a one-off project, or we'll step in and act as your interim CMO whilst it transitions. And the point is that you, as a business, you may well want to maintain and have somebody on the board as CMO, but the business owners and the investors have been tasked, I would say, with trying to choose them. And it's really difficult to go and choose them. And part of that problem, they thought, was getting a chief growth officer in.
Mm.
And again, that doesn't always work out for the best, because they're sales orientated. The chief growth officer has to be as clued in on marketing as they are on selling.
Yeah.
And they don't exist.
Yeah.
They're the old sales and marketing director. If this problem has been endemic for this long, it means nobody's looking at it from this perspective.
Yeah. And there's an article about that on our website,
yeah,
isn't there?
Yeah. And it's about looking at change. And the point is that businesses have to change. The world changed this year in March when the lockdown happened. And if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got.
Mm.
You'll just be a statistic. It's just not your time yet, but it will be, whether it's 3, 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 10 years. You'll just be a statistic if you carry on doing what you're doing.
Okay.
And that's why the white paper is downloadable from our website. We don't want your email address, just download it. The playbook's downloadable. Don't want your email address, just download it. Plus everything else that we've written, books that we've written, are available online. We've made ourselves accessible, and someone has to demonstrate how that this is doable.
Yeah.
And so that's it.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, well, for the readers and listeners and watchers, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you in the next one. Meanwhile, take a look through our website, and hopefully there'll be a raft of documents and information and articles there that can help you in your quest to get your marketing sorted. Bye for now.